This has been a great topic for me to delve into. I grew up on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, and some of my ancestors actually moved down from Chicago to grow satsumas at that time. So I could have called this the history of satsuma production on the Gulf Coast, because that's mainly what I'm going to focus on. And there's a long history of growing satsumas here, and there will always be a niche for satsuma mandarins on the Gulf Coast. And that's because they're delicious, easy to peel, and we like sweet things around here, if you've had any of the sweet tea. But also because they're cold hardy. If you graft onto the trifoliate orange, then they're one of the most cold hardy commercial citrus that there are. They're acclimated or can survive temperatures as low as 12 degrees if they're in the peak of dormancy, and obviously can be damaged by temperatures much higher when they're not acclimated. So I guess it started with the introduction of satsumas into Florida by George Hall in 1876, and then again by Miss Van Valkenburg in 1878. She was the wife of the U.S. minister to Japan, and is credited with the name Satsuma. And Satsuma is the name of a former province in Japan where it's believed that they originated. The first planting was in Alabama was in 1898. They were probably growing satsumas a little bit earlier in Louisiana. But irregardless, there was a major freeze, actually the lowest recorded temperature in Florida in 1899. So most of the satsuma production started after the turn of the century. And there was early success. There was a relatively long period of no damaging freezes. And then between the period of 1908 to 1911, approximately a million satsuma trees were imported from Japan and planted all along the Gulf Coast. Mostly Owari. This is a postcard around that time in Mobile, Alabama. So what I mean by the Gulf Coast is all along this area here. And so this is the Satsuma Belt of the early 1900s, all the way from the panhandle of Florida, all through Alabama, Gulf Coast, to Mississippi, Louisiana, and then on into Texas. Texas I'm not going to talk about too much, but they had some extensive plantings of satsuma around Houston and the Beaumont region up until 1916, when the hurricane of 1916 that almost wiped out Galveston pretty much ended the satsuma industry, and the citrus industry has been regulated to the Rio Grande Valley essentially since then. So to give you an indication of the time period or what was going on, this is a headline from the New York Times in 1915 that says, "Turn from cotton to orange growing. Alabama planters find fruit from Japan, thrives on old forest track." So this indicates some of the main things that were going on that led to the satsuma production. The boll weevil was devastating cotton in Alabama, and so they were looking for alternative crops to plant. And there was a lot of old forest track land available because extensive logging had been going on, especially on the Gulf Coast regions. So all along the Gulf Coast, particularly in Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida, there was a lot of longleaf pine trees, and they had been a lot of them had been clear cut, and by the early 1900s, and railroad companies had extensive land holdings. Some other serious investors or serious land companies had large tracts of land that they were looking to sell to Northerners. They were trying to entice Northerners to come down and live the life of leisure and buy some of their extensive land holdings. And some of these, they brought home some major investors, and some of the acreage or farms were 5,000 acres or more. Most of the farms were small farms that had been subdivided, and that made up the bulk of the production, but there were some really large farms at this time. So here's one of the examples of the subdividing that was going on. This is a pamphlet around prior to the 1920s, I believe, and this is from Grand Bay Land Company, which is in South Alabama. Their plan was to subdivide 10-acre tracts of land and plant satsumas interplanted with pecans, and then also have magnolia figs in there. And I took out some of the quotes. There was this was one of my favorites. No hard labor nor mad rush of work enter into this industry. Pecans fall off trees to be gathered and marketed at one's leisure. Satsumas, when ripe, hang on the trees for months to be picked and shipped at convenience. Only 100 acres left, 100 orchards left. And there were lots of other examples, particularly when Florida got the land boom in the 1920s. They're renowned for sending out promotional pamphlets and enticing Northerners to come down and buy land. So this is a schematic of that land company's design and part of their brochure. So Grand Bay, by the way, is right down here. The Satsuma industry in Alabama, as an example, it was estimated to be about 20,000 acres in the prior to 1917. And so one major reason for this is that after the lowest recorded temperature of 1899, there was a 15-year period where there was no devastating freezes. And so there's a lot of early success stories. A lot of people were really profitable growing satsumas. And then they built up to about 20,000 acres. And then a hurricane and really the cold weather of 1917 had a big effect. But all the production in Alabama essentially was below what is now I-10 in Baldwin and Mobile County. So Grand Bay is over here, and then this is Fairhope in Baldwin County. A lot of the satsumas were originally planted as interplants between pecans, but actually satsumas were so successful they ultimately cut down a lot of the pecans and kept the satsumas. Essentially, there were three main varieties, but really, this whole industry was based on one variety, Owari, which was far superior to these other two, on one rootstock, trifoliate orange. And those still are the preferred cultivar and rootstock that are used to this day. One interesting thing I found that they did a lot of things right for this industry, and one of them was I think ahead of its time, where they had a nursery certification program. In Alabama, they had a rule where they required the nurseries to say where they got the budwood, and they were able to trace back to the original plants or trees where that budwood came from. Originally, they were spaced 15 by 15 foot, and then they saw that this was too close in most cases, so they recommended usually around 25 by 25 feet. Essentially no irrigation, used a lot of manure. Most communities in the area, at least in South Alabama, had one or more dairies in the area, so they used a lot of cow manure, and then also used inorganic fertilizer, typically applied once a year in the spring or early summer. This is in South Alabama, 1925. You can see some of the heaters used for cold protection. This is another picture around that time, plowing the orchard in 1928. These are both in South Alabama, and then their harvesting practices in 1925. The Gulf Coast Citrus Exchange was a big part of this industry, and the growers in South Alabama, once they got close to 20,000 acres, they saw that they really needed a way to market this fruit, and they needed to work together. And so they pulled their money together and formed the Gulf Coast Citrus Exchange in 1915. This was responsible for handling, grading, and marketing about 75% of the satsuma production along the Gulf Coast, not just in Alabama. They eventually marketed to New York City, Chicago, Canada, into Europe, primarily London. And their grades were, the first grade was Sugar Sweet, and then second grade Gulf Breeze, and then third grade Sunny South. This is one of the many packing plants in South Alabama in 1925. To give you an indication of the amount of production, this is the number of 90-pound boxes produced in Louisiana is a green line, Alabama is a brown line, and the Mississippi is a blue line. And this is the number of 90-pound boxes produced 1899 up until 1965. You can see how Mississippi and Alabama, they are all right along the Gulf Coast, really close, geographically to each other, and so they experience most of the same weather events, and so their trend lines essentially follow the same pattern. And then you can see how it kind of peters out in 1940, where Louisiana endures and had a really, really good time here. And I'll talk about some of the things that happened in Louisiana later. But what happened essentially in Mississippi and Alabama is a lot of periodic cold fronts coming through. And so in 1923, that was a peak for Alabama. They had about 700 carloads. And then right after that, there was a severe freeze. But all these came back, and really the roaring 20s was a good time for Satsuma production along the Gulf Coast. It was the 30s that really hurt the industry. One thing that happened was in 1929 was the stock market collapse. And so all during the 30s was the Great Depression. But also adding to that was there's a severe freeze in 1930, severe freeze in 1933, two freeze events in 35. A lot of the trees are gradually dying out as a result of all these freezes. And then the final blow was in 1940, where it got really cold in 1940, and then again in January of 1941. And that was essentially the end of the Satsuma industry in Mississippi and Alabama. Florida became a major player in the Satsuma industry. I think a lot of it was they were looking to rival the Central and South Florida citrus industries. And same thing that was going on in Alabama. There's a lot of logging that went on and a lot of land available that the railroad companies owned. And so they encouraged or enticed some large investors. One of them was one of the Ringling brothers. J.C. Penney was one of them, and a lot of this growth was Satsuma's played a large part of it. So the Satsuma fever hit West Florida by the early 1920s. They were encouraged by early success stories out of Alabama and in Escambia County, which is right on the border with Alabama. Those were the first ones to plant. Ultimately, Marianna became kind of the capital of what they called Satsuma Land. They used to call West Florida Satsuma Land during this period. So they ended up marketing to many cities throughout the North and were said to have averaged about 1,000 carloads per year by the early 1930s. And I couldn't really distinguish Satsuma acreage in the West Florida or the Panhandle from the rest of citrus acreage in Florida. So all these are from literature. But they're said to have 8,000 acres in 1924, and all the plantings were just limited by the availability of plants. Optimism was high. There were really a lot of optimism and a lot of speak of cooperating with Central and South Florida and how the industries could both flourish and share information. In Marianna, Florida and Jackson County, they had a big Satsuma Orange Festival, highlighted by a mile-long parade and free acts of extraordinary character. At this time, they had a delicious drink, kind of like lemonade, called Satsumade. That was apparently very profitable, and so times were really really nice in the 1920s. A lot of big investments going in, a lot of land development with Satsuma acreage as a part of that. In 1934, it was said that they had more Satsumas than any other state, and possibly more than all of them combined. And all of this in the Panhandle of Florida. This is a two-year-old grove near Marianna, Florida, with cover crops, and then the Satsumas right here. But similar to Alabama, they received a lot of the same weather events that Alabama Gulf Coast received, and a lot of these investments didn't make it because of the recession that was going on. The Ringling brothers, or one of the Ringling brothers, his investment, they built a nice hotel and planted 1,000 acres of Satsumas, but then they ran out of money due to the recession and Floridale, which was the name of this town that was being developed, never came into being. So what happened, similar to Alabama, the freezes in 34 and 35 really hurt the industry, and a lot of the orchards were abandoned after that. And the final blow was the brutal winter of 1940. Now, the Louisiana citrus industry endured much longer. And actually, oranges were first planted in Louisiana in the early 1700s by Jesuit priests. The first mandarins are said to arrive into the U.S. via New Orleans in 1843, though I don't think these were satsumas. Historically and presently, the citrus acreage has been almost 90% south of New Orleans. This is New Orleans right here. And then all along the Mississippi River and really on Highway 23 going south of New Orleans. And so Belle Chasse, so here we are right here in New Orleans. Belle Chasse is a major citrus growing area. And then you just follow Highway 23 and there's a mile long width of industry that just goes all the way down on both sides of the Mississippi River. So all the way down to at least Port Sulphur. And so that's where most of the citrus is grown now, and that's historically where it's always been grown. There's other satsuma production, and that amounts to about 10 to 15% of the industry in other parts of Louisiana, all along the coast. So in Louisiana, they didn't suffer all of the freeze damage that they did in Mississippi and Alabama, and so had a really pretty major production, averaged around 4,000 to 5,000 bearing acres during most of this time, and then they did suffer freeze damage periodically. Suffered freeze in 1951, but still were doing well until the 60s. And the 60s was really rough on Louisiana citrus production. And in 1962, there was a severe freeze, two freeze events in 63, Hurricane Betsy in 65, and then Hurricane Camille. In 1969, and if you know about Hurricane Camille, it was the standard by which all other hurricanes were measured before Katrina happened. A lot of people stayed behind it that had survived Camille because they didn't think it could get any worse, and so it was really devastating on the citrus production. And so Louisiana left the ag census in citrus for about a decade, and then but they replanted and had about 2,700 acres in 1975. And then the 80s was rough. The 80s, there was a lot of freezes, several freezes in the 80s, but then the major one was in 1989, and that's the year Lake Pontchartrain froze. There was single digits all along the Gulf Coast, and there's no citrus that has been planted since that survived or that is older than 1990 all along the Gulf Coast. And so Lake Pontchartrain didn't completely freeze over, but it stayed in New Orleans. It stayed around 11 degrees for 3 days. And so there was a lot of snow and ice on it. But each time they've replanted and come back. Hurricane Katrina, as you might imagine, was pretty rough on the citrus industry, but maybe not as bad as you would think. A lot of the citrus acreage got flooded in the lower half of Plaquemines Parish, but half of the production was okay. And actually, in 2007, they were said to have a bumper crop on what was left. So, to give you an idea of some of the production practices during this time, clean cultivation was typically recommended, especially early on. We didn't have the herbicides that we do today. And then they often recommended, and later on recommended, a lot of cover crops, legumes as a summer and winter cover crop. A lot of detailed information about all the plowing, disking, harrowing to do throughout the year. This is a picture in South Alabama. And then here's the cover crop in Milton, Florida, near Pensacola. Some of the major pests was purple scale. It was said to be the most economically important pest of satsumas. Still a problem, but not our most important pest. Citrus rust mite was a major problem, and it's often thought of being our most damaging pest now. The citrus red mite and citrus whitefly were big problems, and the sooty mold associated with citrus whitefly infestation. Still problems, but not too bad. The disease that was most talked about was citrus scab or sour scab, and it's still around, and of course affecting sweet orange as well as satsuma, and its economic importance, I said, was ranked next to purple scale at this time. There was essentially five formulations that they sprayed and really the main two was Bordeaux mixture and then an oil emulsion, and lime sulfur was applied. But Bordeaux mixture, mainly for scab, oil emulsion for scale insects and white flies, and then a mixture of the two for both scales and scab, and then lime sulfur was used for mites, and then sometimes nicotine sulfate, but it was not used near as much as the other ones. That was used for thrips. Citrus canker first arrived during this time. It was introduced between that period of 1908 to 1911, when they imported a million trees from Japan. It was first detected in 1912, and they tried pruning it out and a lot of spray treatments, and it wasn't getting rid of the infestation, and so they put a federal quarantine, and they did pretty good eradicating it at this point. It was a lot easier to go in and destroy trees during this period than it is now, and there's not a whole lot of talk about it in a lot of the growing practices or growing recommendation papers that I saw. It was said to be eradicated in 1933, and didn't seem to be too significant a problem. They got a handle on it pretty early. As you know, it came back in 1986. But thought to be eradicated in 1994, and then this third introduction is what has run rampant, and is actually found here. Citrus greening and citrus canker have both been found in New Orleans, and just in the urban part of New Orleans, and that's it. Another interesting thing is satsumas, as many of you may know, they're often ready to eat prior to complete orange peel color development. And so, especially the early varieties, they're typically better when they still have some green on there and then taste kind of insipid or watered down once they have a fully orange peel. And so, during this time, this was a pretty interesting paper in 1923, where it was really detailed on how to build a curing house and all the construction involved, and then they used kerosene stoves to introduce carbon monoxide, and they couldn't measure the gas concentration, but he was real nonchalant about how easy it is to tell how much with the proper concentration. You just need to have a slight disagreeable odor and a burning sensation of the eyes. and then he did say, but get out of there within a minute or two, or you might die. So today, of course, we would use 5 parts per million ethylene or somewhere thereabouts. And locally in Louisiana or LSU, and we've done some research in Alabama, post-harvest ethylene dips have shown to be effective. And for our industry, which is so small and a lot of small production, there might be some usefulness to that. Freeze protection is and was the limiting factor for satsuma production or citrus production in general on the Gulf Coast. Site selection was and still is the main focal point. A lot of talk about proper air drainage. For a while they discouraged windbreaks of any sort, but then in later publications they did see the value in windbreaks on the north and northwest side. But banking was the predominant recommendation, and it did save many trees, particularly in that freeze of 1917. So this is an example of banking using soil to cover the bud union. They did use heaters, use wood fires to some success, use coke heaters. This is an example here in Alabama, and then later oil-fueled heaters, which were more efficient. A lot of growers didn't put much stock into these, because one reason is they're real expensive and kind of a pain to use, but a lot of growers did use heaters. Some of the current freeze protection strategies now include a windbreak on the north and northwest side. Our main problem isn't radiational freezes. We can typically protect against radiational freezes. It's the advective freezes or the cold fronts that come through that cause the problems. And so a windbreak coupled with potentially sprinklers is our best protection strategy at this point. Well, potentially besides high tunnels, and high tunnels is in use in several areas to grow satsumas, obviously on small acreage, but in central and south Alabama, and you can grow Meyer lemons and lots of different citrus if you protect them during the winter. he actually uses this rain barrel, the black barrel filled with water, as a source of heat in his eye tunnel. And then microjet sprinklers is our main recommendation for protection against cold. And so we have a microjet sprinkler that's applying at 45, 90 degree angle on the graft union. And then once they get bigger, then you put one that's going 360 in the center of the canopy to protect all the branches. And this does work pretty well, but obviously it depends on the duration of the freeze and the wind and a lot of factors that come into play. Okay, so current production in Louisiana, there's around 1,000 acres, a lot of sweet orange production. I talked mainly about satsumas, but in Louisiana, they grow a lot of navels, a lot of sweet oranges, and they're easier to store better and are easier to ship. And so south of New Orleans, a lot of the production is about 60% sweet oranges, about 40% satsumas. In other areas where they grow citrus, it's predominantly satsumas in Louisiana. Alabama has about 231 acres, which has been growing, somewhat. Mississippi, I'm really not sure. I'm guessing around 70 acres. The census said 246, but that's got to be a gross overstatement. After talking with extension agents, I don't think that's correct. Not much production in Texas, except for, you know, obviously in the Rio Grande Valley with all the grapefruit. All right, I'll open it up for questions. Yes.
As a non-citrus person, what's the quality? Does satsuma have any seeds at all?
That's a good point. That's another reason we grow them. They're typically called seedless. With seedless, I think you can call things seedless if they have six or less seeds.
How do they compare in quality to clementines?
Well, I'm biased, but they're very comparable. They're easier to peel, for one thing, easier to segment. Clementines, in my experience, sometimes they can have more acidity, so sometimes the flavor can be more complex, or satsumas are sweeter in general. But it's pretty comparable, and satsumas could have fit into that category of cuties, you know, if they would have had significant acreage and money to do that. But it's comparable.
Global warming will affect these cold freezes?
That's a good question. I'm sure it'll have some effect, but I see it always as going to be a cycle where, as a satsuma grower on the Gulf Coast, you've got to be prepared to just replant. You got to know that you're going to have a freeze
that kills
a tree at least once a decade, maybe plant on once every 5 years. And that's the mindset of growers in Louisiana and Alabama, is that we're going to be profitable for a while, but we're not. There's hardly any growers that are, you know, this is my livelihood, is all citrus. So a lot of them have diversified, you know, pecans and vegetable crops, and then also satsumas. But you got to be prepared to replant. Yes. That's a good question. Essentially none. it's all local markets. There's been of course several ventures into large scale production, and even in Alabama they went through a couple years where they were providing fruit to Walmart and rudimentary packing houses. But in Louisiana, which has most of the production, and then all along the Gulf Coast, it's all sold locally. All family-owned farms, actually. In Louisiana, there's the Becknells, in particular, have five, maybe six generations where they've been growing citrus in the same family.
Okay. Thank you so much. That's so fascinating.